The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good day. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. Thank you for being with us. My guys, Tim Legler, Big Perk, Kendrick Perkins. Gentlemen, how we feeling this morning?
What's going on, Molly? What's
I'm
up, Legs?
I'm feeling wonderful.
What's good, up? Good, good. Because we got a whole lot to get into. Gentlemen, what a weekend it was in sports. Let's get right to it. And I want to start just across the bridge. And BK, you know where I'm going. Kyrie Irving made his home debut Sunday night during a 119-110 loss to the Charlotte Hornets, making it clear that he believes his presence on the court represents something much bigger than basketball. New York City Mayor Eric Adams rolled back the mandate last week. For athletes and performers that are unvaccinated, they can perform in New York. Irving received a huge ovation from the sold-out crowd. Gentlemen, this was the largest in Barclays Center history, 18,000-plus, but Kyrie struggled to find a rhythm, finishing just 6 for 22 from the field in almost 41 minutes. He had 16 points and 11 assists, but was just 1 for 9 from beyond the arc. Here's Kyrie Irving on where Brooklyn currently stands.
We know where we are in the standings, and we also know how much talent we have in that locker room and what we're capable of doing. So though this may look like a loss that could have easily been a win column for us, we'll just take our bumps and bruises and move forward.
Meanwhile, gentlemen, the Suns pulled away late to beat the Sixers 114-104. Devin Booker had 35 points. Joel Embiid had 37 points, 15 rebounds. But the better team was the Suns. Phoenix extending their win streak to 8. Philly now 4th in the East. Perk, who has more at stake come playoff time? Is it Brooklyn or Philly?
Well, Molly, when you think of Brooklyn, right, you think of two people, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Absolutely.
And when you think of Philly, you think of James Harden and Joel Embiid. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant both already have championships. They won their rings. So when you think about the 76ers, Joel Embiid, and especially James Harden, are trying to accomplish what Kyrie and KD already have. So I have to go with the 76ers for the simple fact that we're watching James Harden right now. And to me, I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to see a James Harden that could go out there and consistently get you 20, 25 to 30 points a night. I think his game is slowly on the decline. I'm not counting him out just yet. But look, he left the Brooklyn Nets to go to Philly, to go team up with Joel Embiid to win a championship. So with both of those guys starving for a ring, it's the Philadelphia 76ers that have more at stake. And then again, guess what? James Harden is a free agent after this season. So if things don't work out, we have witnessed over the past 2 years that James Harden don't have a problem with leaving.
No, I hear you, Perk, but here's where I'm going to disagree with you. So when I look at Brooklyn, I say to myself, this was put together 2 years ago, and the very day that they paired up, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden, this team was supposed to have getting ready for their second championship by now. It's a very good chance they get bounced in the play-in, or at worst, at best case, they lose a first-round series this year. That's going to be two consecutive seasons. They're not even close to that goal. When I look at Philadelphia, going into the season, this was not a championship contender with Ben Simmons. They certainly weren't without him because they didn't replace him with anything. So, okay, they go get James Harden, and I understand what you're saying. Neither one of their two stars have checked that box yet, so I get it. There is a sense of urgency that they want to go ahead and get that done, but at the same time, James Harden joined the team, you know, with two-thirds of the season already gone. He is not the same player that he was in Houston, and it's obvious physically when you watch him. His inability to win that matchup in front of him and beat that first defender and put him in his rearview mirror, which is really what his entire game is predicated on, that's not quite the same. And I saw some numbers this morning that were great. His blow-by rate has dropped down to mediocre level by NBA standards, where he was in the 90th percentile of winning that matchup. So your point about what he looks like is valid. I'm just saying They haven't been together that long, and he is not the same player. So I just don't think it's quite as fair to put those level of expectations on those guys after being together such a short time when you look at what Brooklyn did 2 years ago, and they might be 2 years in, not even coming close to that goal.
No, but Legs, CC, that's the – to me, I think James Harden is the reason why the expectations for Philly has to be high for the Nets and they have more at stake. Because of what James Harden has done over the past 2 years, forcing his way out of Houston, going to Brooklyn, preaching about scary hours, and then all of a sudden you choose to leave Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and say, I want to go to Philly. I want to go to Philly. James Harden, the only thing he has left to accomplish is actually winning the championship. That's the only thing he actually really needs to accomplish. He has stacked up every individual accolade you possibly could imagine offensively. Offensively. Not no defensive player accolades. I'm talking about on the offensive end. But when you look at it, he is the one, right? He's almost out of his prime. He knows he needs to win a championship. And when you choose to leave Kevin Durant, who's arguably the best basketball player in the game today, and go to Philly, force your way out? Nah, I gotta say he has the most at stake along with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Look, I think there's two different points being made. I think you're dead right on the James Harden one, because I think when you look at the four players we're talking about, the four stars involved in these two teams, there is no question that James Harden still has the most to prove, because you look at what he did in Houston, and he ran an offense that was unprecedented. In NBA history, there's never been an offense that was that ball dominant with one player, the way that he orchestrated things in Houston. Year after year after year, good teams had a chance, came up short, whether it was his own play or injuries or teammates' injuries, whatever it was, they always came up short. So nobody has more pressure amongst the four than James Harden. But when you talk about the team, I gotta still stick with Brooklyn, because everybody expected the day that those three guys came together. I know James Harden's not there anymore, but I'm talking about the grand plan that was hatched with that organization, bringing in Steve Nash, getting these three guys to play together. They thought they're gonna be working on their second parade route. They haven't come close to that. Now, injuries have played a part, but that doesn't matter. NBA doesn't care. There's no sympathy for teams that get hurt. For me, the fact that they could be 2 years into this and they have not even, you know, reached a final, which is probably not going to happen this year with the way they play defense, to me, that's the bigger disappointment than Philadelphia potentially not getting there right now with Joel Embiid and a James Harden that is a reduced version, clearly, of what he was in Houston.
Well, Legs, let me ask you a question. If the Nets don't achieve, or say, just say they don't make it to the finals or the Eastern Conference Finals, or say they underachieve, and say Philly underachieve, who would get criticized the most?
I think James Harden individually, honestly, he would get more of the heat from this, even more so than the respective teams, or even in the case of Philadelphia, Doc Rivers is going to have a lot to answer for if this doesn't go right. I think Joel Embiid will probably be off the hook. I think he's going to put up great numbers whether they lose a series or not. I think Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are going to put up numbers whether they lose or not. James Harden's iffy, and James Harden was the guy that basically handpicked where he wanted to go and forced his way out. So for me, it's going to fall at his feet. But I'm looking at them, and you got to be realistic about this. When James Harden jumped on that Acela Express from Brooklyn and jumped down to Philadelphia, 30th Street Station, and I've been on that train many, many times. When he got off that train, people had great expectations. But when you really look at him physically night to night, there's so many reasons to be concerned now. And I was as hopeful as anybody. I thought maybe that was going to put him over the top. But when I watch him every night, and last night was a great example, you just look at him and you say, man, this is not the same guy physically. And if he's not, he doesn't have the ability to beat you from the perimeter. He has to beat you from the paint, at the rim, and at the line. He is really struggling to do that right now, Perk. So I'm just saying, the reality of it is he's not the player that he needs to be right now to be able to make it a realistic expectation that they get through and win a championship. And that's why, for me, I've already kind of looked at them differently than I did the day that he ended up in Philadelphia.
Perk, last word here.
And guess what, Lex? I don't disagree with you one bit. He doesn't look like the James Harden of old. But at the end of the day, none of us are trying to hear that. You forced your way and you left KD and Kyrie and you went to Philly. And by the way, Molly, hey, look, this is my first time on First Take with Lex, and I had to hand him his first L.
I'll leave that up to the folks at home. Hey, gentlemen, a lot of Philly and Brooklyn.
Judge and jury. You can't be judge and jury, Perk.
Please. Gentlemen, but you know who's saying not so fast? That would be the Celtics. Irish eyes are smiling. Don't look now. Boston Celtics are first in a loaded East after beating the T-Wolves last night. Boston on a 6-game win streak and just thriving. As for their longtime rival, the Lakers, this is not their year, but it is LeBron who continues to dominate as a scorer despite the King putting up 39-9-5. The purple and gold blow a 23-point lead versus the Pelicans and drop to 10th in the standings, now at risk of missing the play-in. LeBron, 10th in the West. How you feeling?
It feels like I mean, excuse my language, but that's what it feels like. You know, I came in with the mindset, understanding it was a playoff type, it was going to be playoff type atmosphere, playoff implications and things of that nature. So, you know, I knew that from the jump. We also got a lot of guys on our ball club that haven't played in playoff games as well. That plays a lot of big minutes for us. You know, it feels like a wasted opportunity, obviously, for myself and for our team, and we weren't able to get it done.
Listen to this. The mighty have fallen. Of the teams in the West most likely to be in the play-in tournament, the Lakers now have the lowest chance to make it. That, according to our analytics here at ESPN, the Spurs are only one game behind Los Angeles for 10th and hold the conference tiebreaker at the moment. Big Perk. I'm here. Perk, you didn't know this, but I grew up with a diehard Celtics fan, my father, because you grew up in Connecticut, and you guys used to come play at the Hartford Civic Center a few times a year. Yes, it was actually Celtics, Yankees, Giants. Yes, sir. So now I'm rooting for the Celtics just so I could take my dad to a game. Tell me this. Bigger headline, that Boston is first in the East or the Lakers are 10th in the West?
You know what? I'm going to leave the Celtics to Legs. I feel like he going to go that way. I cannot let the Lakers off the hook. I will not let the Lakers off the hook. And I know I've been telling y'all I'm tired of talking about them, and I really am. But the fact of the matter is this. If the Lakers, forget the title run, being a title contender, forget, you know, making noise in the playoffs. If the Lakers miss the playoffs, which they have a strong possibility of doing, they could be one of the biggest disappointments in NBA history. Period. It's nowhere around it. We're not talking about them making a run. We're actually talking about them missing the playoffs with the addition of the play-in tournament. If they can't get into the play-in tournament, make the playoffs, I don't want to hear nothing. I want to give the Celtics all the credit in the world, but I refuse to let the Lakers off the hook. Not with this team, how it was assembled in the offseason, all the future Hall of Famers that came together, LeBron, Melo, Russ, and all this, and with all the jibber-jab, keep the same energy about these old heads when the season turn around. I don't want to hear nothing. If the Lakers don't make the playoffs, it will be one of the biggest disappointments in NBA history, period.
Listen, I think you're right on it, Perk. Look, here's the deal. Molly, you asked the question, what's the bigger headline? Well, the bigger headline is about the Lakers because LeBron James is still on that roster, and you're talking about a team that potentially could be sitting at home when the playoffs start watching on television, okay? But the better story is clearly the Boston Celtics because go back to the beginning of the season, and look, they made a coaching change in the offseason. Ime Udoka came in, and a lot of people believed that he was going to be a rising star in this profession. But we didn't know that, you know, 2 months in. You were still looking at this team saying, I see a lot of the same things that I saw the last couple of years when I felt like they were ISO dominant. I felt like they make a lot of tough 2-point shots between their star forwards. I didn't see a big change. But it goes to show you, mm-hmm. it takes time for a coach to really put his stamp on a team. And now you look up and this team has gone 22-3 in their last 25 games. All right, this is a team now that has become one of the top defensive teams in the NBA. And here's what's most important. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have been together a long time now. This is by far the best offense they have played at the same time since they have been teammates. Mm. That is a scary proposition for the rest of the league because you're talking about two star forwards with length. They can shoot the ball from deep, mid-range, and get to the rim. So they can beat you on every platform. And they're doing it on the same night. It used to be my turn, your turn type of offense with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now it's pretty much every night. You can dial in 50 on a bad night, 70 on a good night for these two players. And then what's most important for me, what about the supporting cast? They're getting great defensive protection from Robert Williams, who's finishing everything. They're getting great guard play off the bench with Derek White and Peyton Pritchard. Tice was a great addition to bring back to Boston where he's been most comfortable. Al Horford, a veteran voice in the leadership. You know what you're getting with Marcus Smart every night. So now you look at them, and it's primarily because the efficiency of Tatum and Brown has gone to a different place than it ever was before. This is a legitimate championship contender. And if you asked anybody 2 months into the season, you wouldn't have found one person that would have made that statement about the Boston Celtics. And yet here we are with the potential to host every single round in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Unthinkable even 2 months ago.
Legs, I was one of them. Listen, I was saying break them up. Okay, break them up. And you know how I am with the Boston fan base and how I am with the Boston organization. It has been an emotional roller coaster. Look, let me point this out to the people out there. At one point of the season, the Celtics' record was 23-24. Mm-hmm. 23-24. They were one game below 500. And all of a sudden, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum had a coming to Jesus meeting. They had a coming to Jesus meeting outside of basketball. And so the connection started being there, the chemistry, the togetherness. And look, we sitting up here talking about Devin Booker, and rightfully so, entering the MVP conversation. Well, I tell you what, Jason Tatum should be in the MVP conversation as well. I'm not saying he should be the front runner, but his name should be mentioned because he's on everybody's heels like a pair of church socks right now, squeezing them. And for the simple fact that he has, the Celtics at the number one seed in the best conference, that speaks volumes. But I'm with you, Legs, but I just couldn't let the Lakers off the hook. I refuse to let them off the hook.
Now, hey, look, I don't blame you. And look, my final thought on the Celtics is this. For people that have not been watching them every night, if you're just looking at the standings now and you're an NBA fan, you wake up one day and you go, wow, man, the Boston Celtics number one. How's that happening? Just watch them play and you get a better feel. Look, there are five teams, and I'm including Brooklyn in it because they've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You can't exclude them from title talk. So there's five teams in the East. When you look at those five teams, the only two that really have their act together right now are Milwaukee and Boston. Mm-hmm. Miami couldn't be playing any worse. We just talked about James Harden and how he looks physically, and obviously with what Brooklyn is going to have to do potentially coming out of a play-in, and you don't even know if you're going to get Ben Simmons at any point. Those three teams have a lot of things to figure out at the wrong time of the year. Boston and Milwaukee clearly right now playing a different level of basketball than everybody else in the East.
No, and the East obviously wide open, and it's great here at ESPN. We have the Eastern Conference Finals. I can't wait. But I want to go back to what you brought up in Tatum and Brown. What would you say, Perk, where do they rank amongst the best tandems in the NBA right now? Because we've hyped a lot of other duos.
Well, they're top five. They're top five. And I feel like Jaylen Brown, he flies under the radar. Like, and this is the reason why he got named Jaylen Underappreciated Brown, is because we don't appreciate what he's doing. Like, this guy's averaging 24, and you know the great thing about it is that now he has taken a backseat to Jason Tatum, and he's okay with it. But when you look at these two young studs, these guys that's not even 25 years of age, They're a top five duo in this league. I don't know where they fall, but I know they top five. I don't know if they number three. I don't know if it's number four. Again, like I told you before, Molly, it's whatever your preference is. If you want to drink Hen or you want to drink Ciroc, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both will get you drunk, okay?
No, Big Perk, I'm with you. I'm just drinking water. Yeah. Just water and cardio right now. Legs, where are you on this?
No, he's 100% right. Like I always say, look, do you like steak or do you like sushi? I like them both.
Me too.
I'm going to order both, all right? And that's what you get with them. And look, here's the thing about these two guys. As good as they have been, not good, they've been exceptional over this stretch. Here's the key. They are going to now have to do the same thing and navigate their way through the postseason, okay? So because it's going to leave you with an empty feeling. If they play this well for this long and they finish the season this way, by the way, they're not just beating people right now. They are smoking people right now. They have as many 30-point wins during this stretch as they do losses total. That's how dominant they have been. But now you've got to make sure that translates to the postseason when here's what's going to happen. Teams get one team to focus on, it's the Boston Celtics. So now there's all kinds of defensive adjustments that are going to be thrown their way. Can they beat you as a facilitator? Because they're going to see more double teams, more coordinated defensive schemes because they only have to worry about two players. So can you handle that? Can you beat somebody as a passer if that's what the situation requires? Can you make a tough contested shot late in a game, in a one possession game, in a series defining moment? So there are still a lot that they've got to accomplish. But right now, I'm with Perk. You got to put him in the top five, but you got to also wait and see what they do in the postseason. They've got to be able to navigate the pressure moments against the teams that they're going to have to go up against. Or after all of this, we're going to have an empty feeling in the summer, I think, about what they just accomplished.
Yeah.
No question, but Perk, I understand that playoff basketball is a different deal, and Legs named about five teams. We get that the East is wide open, but right now, if you had to pick, would you say Boston is the favorite out of the East?
I have to, Molly. I mean, they have the best starting five in basketball, and you could go look at the numbers. I mean, when you talk about offensively and defensively, what they've been doing over the past couple of months, no other team in basketball, including the Phoenix Suns, has been doing what the Boston Celtics has done. But I will say this. To those top teams that are in the Eastern Conference, and Legs, you just pointed to this point. It's a great point. The Brooklyn Nets, they're going to make the playoffs, whether it's the 8th seed or the 7th seed. Here is the thing. If you that number 1 seed or number 2 seed, I don't really know if the Brooklyn Nets is that team that you want to see in the first round going against Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You know what I mean? I'm just putting that out there because it's there to think about. And if I'm a coach, I'm thinking about those situations. I'm trying to see why I'm stacking up, who I'm going to play against, how I'm going to play against. You know, I don't really know if I want to see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in the first round.
No, you listen, all you need to know about that statement is what happened when the Brooklyn Nets went into Philadelphia on March 10th in a game that had as much drama surrounding it as any regular season game you're going to see. And guess what? Those two dudes ran to the light. Everybody else shrunk because it was too much for them. It was not too much for those guys. Those guys thrive on those situations. Mm-hmm. And so you're 100% right. They're going to have a legitimate shot if those two guys take the court. But here's to answer Molly's question.
Yeah.
I'm still going to lean right now to the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because of what they did last year. They broke through something mentally that they really needed to have happen. And obviously Giannis did it. He played the greatest game of his life in the most important moment of his life. Very few guys can say that they're able to do that. They had disappointments 2 years prior as a number one seed, getting bounced, felt disappointing. They come back last year, they kind of flew under the radar in the regular season. They weren't really putting their foot on the gas. They just wanted to be healthy when the postseason started. They added Jrue Holiday and boom, they're NBA champions. They've kind of approached this season the same way. They've had some injuries. They haven't really worried about seeding. They're just sort of laying in the grass waiting. But now that I know they can navigate those pressure moments and Giannis Antetokounmpo can make important free throws when he has to, things like that, I'm going to still give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they've earned that right. But there is no question Boston now has played themselves into a situation where you expect to see them at minimum in the conference finals.
It's absolutely unbelievable. All right, Perk and Legs will be back. We'll have much more on the pros in April, but now I need to get to the college kids getting it done in March. Final Four talk.
The Coach K farewell tour has one more stop. And for the first time, the Duke Blue Devils will take on North Carolina in an NCAA tournament.
Villanova has survived and advanced.
The only number one seed left, the Kansas Jayhawks, headed to the Final Four.
We're not done yet.
It feels great to be going back to the Final Four. It never gets old.
It's not a hope. It's not a dream anymore. It's a reality.
Let's go to New Orleans.
The Final Four is filled with some elite programs, with this year's group combining for 17 national titles. Of the four, Duke, the favorite to win it all, but they'll have to go through rival UNC, who they never met in the tourney. The coach, Seth Greenberg, joining us now. Seth, thank you so much for being with us this morning. How we doing?
Doing great, Molly. How you doing?
I'm good. This is exciting, Coach. It doesn't get any better than this. Duke and Coach K's final run versus North Carolina. Of all teams, Hollywood couldn't script it any better. But, Coach, should Duke be the favorites to win it all, in your opinion?
Yeah, they should be the favorites because of how they're playing right now. They're playing better than anyone else. Why are they playing better than anyone else? Think about this. 52% of their points are being scored in the paint. They're playing downhill. They're not settling. They're shooting 70% from the paint, which is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. 41 points a game. Why are they doing that? Because you know what? Paolo Banchero's not settling. Jeremy Roach is giving them a burst in transition. You talk about what they're doing defensively, their ability to keep the ball in front, contest shots. And Mark Williams has not been good. He's been absolutely phenomenal protecting the front of the rim. Only was four block shots a game. And then finally, the last thing they have to do at the end of the game is they've got to close out games. In the last 5 minutes of games, they've been not good. They've been great. So when I look at these four teams, all four teams have had incredible journeys to the Final Four. Duke is playing their best basketball at the right time. And the burden of Coach K's last season has not been an issue in the NCAA tournament.
No question. It kind of feels like it's lining up when we're talking about this Hollywood script for Coach K, Coach. But UNC did beat Duke in Coach K's final game at Cameron Indoor. We all saw that. How do the Tar Heels stack up against the Blue Devils?
They stack up well. First of all, North Carolina right now, since in the last 11 games, are only allowing about 66 points a game. So they're really defending at a high level. They're competing at a high level. Mm-hmm. But look at the makeup of this team, Molly. And you look at the makeup of this team. They put the ball in R.J. Davis's hands. What does he do? He kind of orchestrates. He's their play starter. Caleb Love, he had 27 points in the second half against UCLA. Armando Bacot, he's had 29 double-doubles. Brady Nemanic knocks down big shots, and Leaky Black is an elite defender. To me, I look at North Carolina, they're playing their very best basketball. They've got great trust in each other. Hubert Davis has not done a good job. He's done a great job leading this team, navigating the season, navigating the slow start to the season. So, Carolina, I could see a way that they can win. Look, they rolled into Cameron Indoor Stadium on Coach K's senior night.
Yes.
And absolutely not only won the game, but closed out the game in the last 5 minutes. So could Carolina win? Yes, they could win. Do I think Duke is better right now in this moment in time? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Jay Will was here before finishing up his show. He said this is the biggest game in tournament history. All hyped up for it. We all are. But it's not just about the Blue Bloods. We love the Cinderella stories as well. St. Peter's. Come on, Coach. You love this. Defying the odds, making it to the Elite Eight. What is the significance of their run? And shout out to Coach Holloway.
What the significance is, if you think about it, you know, one, how did they get their identity? Their style of play obviously disrupted a Kentucky, a Purdue, a Murray State that was playing as well as anyone in the country. What it does, it gives hope. It gives hope to the little guys. But you know what it also does? It puts pressure on every mid-major coach and every small major coach because every AD is walking into their coach right now going, why can't we be St. Pete?
Yeah.
You know, if they can get to the Elite Eight, what are we doing wrong? So it's been an unbelievable story. The joy that they brought to that community, to that league, the exposure they've gotten has been great. And the way they play winning basketball. But how they won, I think the best lesson that anyone could learn from this is it's okay to be different. Because the identity of how they played is the reason they got where they got. And now Shaheen Holloway's on his way to Seton Hall.
Yeah. Yeah, we knew that was coming, right? Let's get to the other matchup. Huge blow for Villanova, though, Coach. Guard Justin Moore tearing his Achilles. He's second in points and assists for the team. How is that going to impact their matchup versus Kansas?
It's a huge loss. He's their best defender. He rebounds from the guard position. They can back him down. He makes big shots. He's got a toughness and experience. Now, what's going to happen is Caleb Daniels is going to slide into that spot, and that's great. The problem is Caleb Daniels, all right, if you think about it, he plays 78% of the bench minutes for this Villanova team, so they have no depth. So what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to slow the pace of the game down. They're going to have to make the game a crawl. No one can get in foul trouble. They've got to keep the game in front, but losing Justin Moore is a huge loss because he's their second leading scorer. He's got a physicality to him. He's got experience. He's got toughness. He's an elite defender. But Villanova has a way to win this game. Own the tempo of the game. Stay out of foul trouble. All right. And most importantly, when you're Villanova, you're playing inside out on those kickout threes. 46% of the shots come from the three-point line. They're knocking down threes. There's a way for them to figure out a way to win this game. But they got to slow down the transition game of Kansas.
All right, Coach, give it to me. Predictions, where are we going here?
Kansas and Duke right now. I could change that later in the week, but right now looking at
it's
the
game. It's fluid, like Stephen A. says. So,
exactly. Yeah,
it's fluid. Flexible. It's fluid.
I mean, it's Monday, but I love the way Kansas closed out their game the other day. The second half, they were dominant defensively. They've got more ways to beat you. They've got greater depth. They can play inside through McCormick. Obviously, Ochai Agbaji is very special. Then, just look, nothing against North Carolina. I'm not disrespecting Hubert Davis. I'm not disrespecting North Carolina. It's just really how Duke is playing right now. They're playing on both sides of the floor. They're defending. They're efficient. They're playing downhill. Banchero has been his very best in the NCAA tournament. But Jeremy Roach has been his very best, playing 35 minutes a game and making the good decisions. So right now, Monday, I'd say it's Duke and Kansas.
Okay, we'll check back in with you later, though.
Yeah, and Jay Will is correct. Duke and Carolina is always, obviously, the biggest game in college basketball, gets the best ratings. Duke and Carolina with a chance to win a national championship. Duke and Carolina, Act 3. Duke and Carolina, potentially Coach K's last game. Duke and Carolina with Coach K having a chance to win a sixth national championship. Come on now, that's just
doesn't get bigger.
Duke, Carolina,
can you imagine,
with people in the stands.
Right? Can you imagine what those tickets are going to cost? It's going to be unbelievable.
My goodness.
Unreal.
It's going to be a bigger event than the Final Four has ever been because of that matchup.
For sure. Coach, you're the best. We'll talk to you later this week.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, our most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings awaits you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com deals. I'm Molly Karam, and I hope you have a fabulous day. Thanks for listening to the pod.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Dan, you're going to like this. It's about time we showed Detroit some love. You know who's certainly made for Hard Knocks? The Lions coach, Dan Campbell, and clearly HBO felt the same way. Let me just refresh your memory.
So this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right. That's going to be the mentality.
Just going for it.
That's my guy.
Just going for it.
Not a coach that I'm rooting for more in the NFL than Dan Campbell. I played with Dan in Detroit and I've watched him play games with like RoboCop type arm braces on because his body's so beat up. I think he's a perfect coach for that city. Hard Knocks. I'm excited that it's there.
He's a gamer.
Jared Goff was on Hard Knocks before, right? And then we learned that he didn't learn very much at school.
Like, he didn't know the sun rose in the east instead of the west. Yeah.
This is going to be a good
season. All right, Neek, what do you think? You like the Lions on Hard Knocks?
It seems fun. Like between Jared Goff learning about basic facts about the world and science is going to be great. And Dan Campbell, his speeches, his pre-practice speeches, I feel like are going to have game day intensity. I'm looking forward to this. There may not be much Lions football to watch in like December or January.
It's unnecessary though. Stephen A. is not here doesn't mean you have to take your shot at Detroit.
I'm not. Detroit's beautiful. I was just there. My cousin lives there. It's a fun place to be in the summertime. But they will not be in the playoffs. Is that crazy to say? Like, it's fact.
I don't know. In the NFC?
The exciting part of their season is going to be the preseason. It's going to be Hard Knocks, watching them bite kneecaps and whatnot. And Jared Goff learn about the position of the moon. Do you think he knows anything about, like, the moon? No. Does he even know what it is?
Let's leave it there. I like it. I think it's a good fit, and I'm with you. Detroit's a good time. Downtown, they've really built it up. People should check it out. Let's go over to Naptown now, though, gentlemen. The Colts, they're starting a new quarterback week one for the seventh straight year. This season, it'll be a proven vet in the four-time Pro Bowler, Matty Ice. After 13 years with the Falcons, Matt Ryan headed to Indy. Colts head coach Frank Reich had this to say this weekend about Matt Ryan, telling NFL Network, "I think everyone saw from the outside that this is a good fit. Like, people can universally agree. You got a guy who's still playing at a high level and a team and roster that is built to make some noise. We needed each other." I love that quote. Dan, is it more likely the Colts over or underachieve?
Well, as I sit here today, it's going to be an underachievement. Now Matt Ryan's an absolute stud. He's still playing at big time level football wise. But the Colts, I don't think, are as good of a roster as I kind of felt they were mid-November last year right now. I mean, they don't have a left tackle right now. They don't have a number one bona fide tight end right now. Their starter retired in Jack Doyle. And they don't have a number two or a number three wide receiver. And their number one wide receiver, Michael Pittman, is good. I still think there's some question marks if he's your bona fide one. And so Until they got to do all that without a first-round pick this year. And so how do they supplement this offensive roster that, run-blocking-wise, this offensive line is phenomenal. And with Jonathan Taylor as an MVP candidate, they're phenomenal. They're not great in pass protection, and they don't really have a plethora of pass-catching options. Now, Matt Ryan will be more accurate than Carson Wentz, which will lead to a better performance by those receivers, but it's still not. In that conference, it's still going to be really difficult for me to sit here and think that Matt Ryan, unless they get some supplemental pieces via the draft and maybe some extended weeks of free agency, that it's going to be this team that all of a sudden can go and beat, you know, some of those top four or five teams in the conference. I will tell you this, Molly. I do not think that after they moved on from Carson Wentz, I did not feel great about their options of or chances of winning the division. Matt Ryan still gives them a very solid chance to win that division in contention with the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right about the conference being tough, but I don't think the division is that tough. So I guess whether they're going to overachieve or underachieve, I would say overachieve because I'm setting the line. I don't think people think they're going to be able to take that division from the Titans. And I think that's hard for us to have this debate where they overachieve or underachieve if we don't determine what the expectation is. And right now, I think the expectation is probably a wild card. And I think they'll overachieve because I think they can win that division. You pointed out all the holes that they have. And you also pointed out that there's still time to fill them. But the big acquisition that they made was a quarterback, most important position on the field. And I know that Matt Ryan is an MVP, Matt Ryan, and Carson Wentz was not terrible for them last year. He was just terrible in important moments. And I think the addition of a veteran smart quarterback like Matt Ryan elevates them in those moments. And I think that gets them past their division rival, the Titans, and they win the division. They're not going to go in a deep playoff run, though.
Yeah, I guess it's all about what your expectations are. You know, it's funny. It's, I guess, not funny, but ironic. If you had asked this question and we went back in time to week 15 last year, the Colts were, in many people's eyes, certainly mine, the team that no one wanted to play. Like, they had just gone on that month stretch where they hammered Buffalo and hammered Arizona, and you're like, this team's playing as good as anybody. And I think the question you have to ask is, when Matt Ryan comes in, like, does he not do the terrible left-handed interception against Tennessee to lose the game, or the crosser that Byard picks off? Does he not do the last 2 week stretch against the Raiders and the Jacksonville Jaguars to play so poorly? But he also was a quarterback that played good football for a 3 month stretch last year. And I think it's a fair question to ask, whether you don't like numbers or whatever, do we feel really confident that Matt Ryan is going to come in and go 28 plus touchdowns and 7 interceptions or less? Like, I don't, that would be a very good performance.
Yeah, by the numbers, and like if you go QBR by all situations, they're pretty comparable. They're not very different as far as quarterbacks are concerned. Right. But I do think that part of this is psychological. Honestly,
I agree.
Like, I think part of this is that building. And I promise you that building feels better now than they did even when they first acquired Carson Wentz. From what I understand, he didn't have too many fans when they brought him in there. It was one guy that was pushing for him, and then he got there. And I think that's a bad situation. That's not fair to him.
Because Nick, sorry to cut you off there. Speaking of Carson Wentz, I want to ask you this. Who do you think is in a better situation? Do you think it's Carson now being in Washington? Because I think I remember you had Washington winning the division. Obviously, we know it's the NFC least. Or do you think now it's Matt Ryan and Indy?
Yeah, I think it's Matt Ryan and Indy, honestly. I think that Carson Wentz's situation is good, but I think that Carson Wentz has been so many places, and even here, it's not too many people. I live in D.C. There's not a lot of excitement about having Carson Wentz. And I think that's part of the problem. It's the baggage that Carson Wentz brings along with him. So he's going to have to come up big in some big moments and do it consistently for people to think differently about him. But I do think that what they have in Indianapolis, they have something on their offense they can build around. They have a dominant rushing attack, and they have a really good front seven on the defensive side of the ball. Those are things you can build around. I don't know that that's the same thing in Washington, especially with the injuries that they had to Chase Young, and understanding that there's one running back in this league that is as good, I think, as Jonathan Taylor, and that's a healthy Derrick Henry. So I think that situation in Indianapolis is a little bit more attractive for more attractive for Matt Ryan than Carson Wentz in Washington.
Yeah, I would probably agree with Dom that it's probably better in Indy. You know, I think that they have to answer some of those questions on their team that I pointed out. You know, Molly, something that we don't like, it's so difficult to really talk about on television. It's also difficult to try to like quantify and figure out is, I think the basic difference, and Dom made this point, is Indy has like an adult now at quarterback. Like they just have.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to like maybe that's not the best phrasing, but they got a like a ice in his veins leader, like a guy that is every day he will walk into that locker room and be a leader of men. And that is not easy to do. And sometimes you pay guys strictly to be able to do that. And I think that the more you hear and the more you find out, that's probably where Carson has some of his biggest lapses is like having that daily ability to go in and do that. I don't know if he's going to be able to change that in a year. And I don't know if that's going to be something that he personality-wise is going to be able to really wrap his arms around and make it a strength. Because right now, it seems the more you hear about the situations in Philly and in Indy, and we can't get kind of information on that, mm-hmm. the more it sounds like a weakness. And I would tell you that talent-wise, I would say Carson Wentz in Washington with Terry McLaurin and Curtis Samuel and Antonio, I'd tell you that. But I think with the whole totality of the importance of playing quarterback and the leadership role of it, I think it's probably Matt Ryan and Indy.
Dan, do you agree with Nick, though, that Wentz could potentially still be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, I do. I think that performance-wise, I think that Carson Wentz has proven that he is a top 10, top 12 player at the position. But he will always have to, or certainly for the next couple years, answer the question, can you be relied on in the most important moments? And are you going to do something stupid with the football when our team needs you least to
that's
do
the,
it, so to speak?
And I think that's
the problem. It feels like it's all psychological. Go ahead, Nick. Right.
I mean, I disagree with Neek. If we thought that Neek said that he was going to be a top 10 quarterback, then Neek is dead ass wrong.
Oh, Neek, hold on. Time out. Neek, I'm so sorry. It's Frank Reich who said that. Frank Reich said he could be a top 10. And I put it on you. That's my bad. Breaking news. That was not Dominique Foxworth. That was his
John,
coach
top 15, though?
Saying that he could be top 10. I apologize, Neek.
Yeah, sure.
I think he'd be top 15. He's as talented as just about anybody in the league. But the problem is, as consistently as he shows those big-time great plays, frankly, more consistently, he shows the bad decisions, and they happen at the worst times. And that's not something that I think goes away. We've learned from Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers that you can throw for a ton of touchdowns and not turn the ball over a bunch. Those are kind of the guys that are able to do that. So you don't have to take the bad with the good. And it seems like with Carson Wentz, no matter what, no matter how good a stretch of football he's playing, at any moment, and sadly, at the big moments, he's going to do something. And you're going to be like, what the hell was he thinking? And that's a problem. You can't make it through an entire season like that, and particularly in the playoffs. Like, you're not going to be able to make a deep run in the playoffs when you have a quarterback that you know, and that affects the rest of the team. Back to the psychological point. Everyone on your team, everyone in the stadium, everyone on the defense is like, we can't make a mistake because who knows what that guy's going to do. Guys on the offense are like, man, who knows what he's going to do at this moment? So that's a tough thing to carry around. It's going to take him a couple years to shake that reputation.